You're listening to Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
@ChuckTodd on social media, the host of Meet the Press, longest running show in the history of the galaxies. I say the galaxies because I was watching Meet the Press Sunday, as I always do, Chuck Todd, and you seem to be quite excited about Star Wars opening this week.
Well, I'll geek out with the rest of them. Yeah. I mean, look, this is the movie franchise of my generation. I think the sad thing is I don't think my kids are nearly as excited about this than I am. That's probably something wrong with me.
I had a sense.
As a parent or what? I don't know.
Well, I had a sense on the panel that Tom Brokaw wasn't as excited as you either.
Not quite. We'll do a little Jedi mind trick on him.
There was, one of my favorite scenes in the original Star Wars was the Star Wars bar, the cantina. And the debate the other night looked a little like the cantina.
I know. It's almost cliche to say it now, but it does feel that way sometimes because they're also having a debate about some issues that are never going to see the light of day.
Right.
So you do sit there sometimes and wonder, boy, we're spending 30 minutes on this. I mean, look, on one hand, it does give you some insight on how these folks think, and that does matter. But sometimes it would be nice to have a little more reality-based conversation.
Well, and there's questions that need to be asked that don't necessarily get asked and certainly never get answered. I thought Chris Christie had a good night, but at some point somebody's got to bring up to Governor Christie the fact that he's got a 33% approval rate in his home state.
Well, and that should matter. At the end of the day, one of the biggest problems in Washington is that we've had now two straight presidents who, by the seventh year of their presidency, have no more political capital.
Right.
And when you have no more political capital, you can't get anything done. You can't fix the system. Chris Christie was elected to be a reformer. Right? The state wanted to boot out sort of what felt like entrenched Democratic low-grade scandal. Okay, one person scandals another person. It's just sort of bureaucratic mess. But he hasn't fixed it. Okay, he's instead running for president. So I think it's a fair hit on him. And the fact is, hey, we have a lot more reforming that needs to be done in this town. So, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that should be more fair game.
Ted Cruz, meanwhile, has one of his main surrogates, a talk radio type in Iowa, who claimed Carly Fiorina was playing the V card. And Ted Cruz, also the guy that showed up at that particular pastor, who I'm not going to give any publicity to, who tried to cite passages in the Bible where he said it advocated the killing of gays. He's in the middle of this punch out with Marco Rubio, and Christie wasn't wrong about that when he said, well, everybody's glazing over.
It was a pretty good line. And look, Christie's rise, by the way, is good news for Ted Cruz. And here's why. Because the stronger Chris Christie is, say in New Hampshire, the harder it is for Marco Rubio. If whoever the establishment choice is going to be. I mean, it's clear you have Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. I think Cruz right now is in the strongest position of any candidate. Forget Trump. I mean, I think I'd rather be Ted Cruz than anybody else right now in trying to get to the nomination at this point where things stand.
Yeah, you mean that politically. You don't mean you'd rather be Ted Cruz.
No, exactly. What I mean politically, sort of where he's positioned in Iowa, I'm not, no comments. I'm not getting, I don't pick sides here.
No, it's not about picking sides. It's just I want people to understand that there's no universe where you want to be Ted Cruz.
Hey, he's got a pretty good life, his wife's multimillionaire and all this stuff. There's a lot of people that would trade places with Ted Cruz as far as his life is concerned. He's got two people.
I wouldn't take any of it, including his hair, and I don't have any.
But when it comes to the primary calendar, the fact that he's got evangelicals, and evangelicals arguably are among the more reliable primary voters. Anyway, all that going for him. And what he needs is the establishment sort of not united. And, Rubio has not yet united them. Christie is surging in New Hampshire. The more muddled that gets, Rubio may not get off the ground. Rubio absolutely is the candidate that I think Hillary Clinton fears the most.
Right.
He presents the best contrast or the worst contrast if you're in her position, but one of the better contrasts if you're the Republican Party. It's generational, diverse. He's when it comes to the issue of immigration, He is not, you know, Hispanics are not going to look at him as somebody that's antagonistic. So there is a lot that he presents as a potential threat to her. But if he can't find a place to win, if he can't unite this so-called establishment around him, and you've got Christy Surgeon in New Hampshire, if you've got a revitalized Jeb Bush who seems to be, you know, ready to just, if he's going to go down, he's going to bring Trump with him. Well, that all of that muddles things up for Marco Rubio.
Got to ask you about Trump. Still feel like the sit-downs you've had with Trump are better than anybody else has had because you've been in his face appropriately and respectfully, and you've actually gotten him to admit to a few things. So stand by for that.
Maybe that's why I don't have him scheduled for another face-to-face.
The last thing Trump wants is questions that he has to answer. It's Chuck Todd, who hosts Meet the Press. And it's every Sunday morning at 9 on NBC5 here in Chicago. Around the country, check your local listings, of course. And is there like cool Meet the Press swag we ought to be buying for the holidays, Chuck?
Well, you know, there's mugs. Let's see here. We've got, I think I just saw we got fleeces. Trust me. Whatever we have, my kids got during nights 5, 6, and 7 of Hanukkah. I don't think they were excited about it, but, you know.
I'm going to have to pick up some Meet the Press.
You always got to fill in, you know. We celebrate both holidays. We have a mixed marriage here. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can't do all 8 nights. You know, big gifts. My kids have learned sometimes nights 5, 6, and 7. Let's just say maybe you get a little Meet the Press swag.
Kids, it's a coffee mug. It's a coffee mug.
Yeah, well, no, at least I got him a fleece. I got a fleece. It's a nice one.
We're talking about Donald Trump here for a second because we have to. Look, I'm done trying to explain the polls. There's no explanation for it. But I wrote something this week on a blog for our WGNRadio.com about the fact that the 4 or 5 policy positions that he's taken, the closest thing that resembles a stand to, he literally could not get done as president of the United States because the powers don't exist to do them. Or in the case of killing the families of terrorists, he would literally be committing war crimes. So when do the facts matter?
I think I am one of those who believes that when voting time happens, you know, then you start seeing voters usually get a little more serious, start thinking about things like, well, all right, we've sent the message. His candidacy has changed the direction of the debate, which I think there were some voters that wanted that, was trying to use their support for Trump to send the message to the whole party, hey, you guys need to do wholesale changing of the party here, not just tinkering around the edges, and that they'll move in other places. We'll see. You know, we've been predicting Trump's downfall for a while now. It hadn't happened. But I have to tell you, you know, he doesn't campaign. He just does whistle stops.
Right.
The modern whistle stops, which is, I mean, literally, he supposedly campaigned in Mesa, Arizona yesterday. Okay, his plane landed on a runway that's near Mesa, Arizona. He never left the airport. Now, he got thousands to show up. He made it happen. It's sort of, you know, but this Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, they like to touch. They like to shake hands with candidates. They like to have intimate conversations. He's not doing that at all. You look at a guy like Chris Christie or Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is doing Iowa the old-fashioned way. Chris Christie is doing New Hampshire the old-fashioned way. One town hall at a time, one meet and greet at a time, and Ted Cruz. And I think that ultimately is also going to be problematic for Trump.
Santorum won Iowa 4 years ago after the votes were recounted. And am I right about this? Did Romney win New Hampshire?
Well, Romney did win New Hampshire, yes.
So my question then is, can Donald Trump lose the first two primaries and still be relevant?
Oh, he can still be relevant. I think that's got to be the thanks to us in the press. Let me ask you this question. Ted Cruz wins Iowa, okay, on that Monday night, caucus night. And the networks declare, and we come out, and Lester Holt, I tell you, all right, we're telling you, Cruz won Iowa. Looks like Trump finished second or third. Let's go to the Cruz victory speech. Oh, wait, Donald Trump's about to speak.
Yep.
Whose speech does everybody go to? You know, Trump is going to have a way, and this is what's going to normally, the person that wins Iowa, look, this sort of happened to Santorum last time, right? We didn't know who won, so he never got his bounce, right? He didn't get that big.
It's true.
He didn't get that big where all the networks come in and, you know. Well, that, if I'm Cruz, I'm a little concerned. How am I going to get my bounce out of Iowa if all of a sudden I'm about to speak? And you and I both know, Trump's no idiot. Let's say Cruz wins, and he sees when Cruz is about to talk. What do you think he's going to do? He'll try to talk right around the same time.
Yes, he will.
And because he's going to dare the networks, and they'll do it. I mean, look, there's this fascination about it. You know, some of us will fight and say, stay with the winner. We'll play Trump on tape. You know what I mean? Like, you can wait. You can do it in order.
Sure.
But you'll see that pressure. And what Trump says in losing could end up being the story versus what. So this is where he is a complicating factor, right? Being such a showman, being so manipulative as sort of a Barnum & Bailey type, that it's going to be a challenge for the actual winners of Iowa and New Hampshire if they're not named Trump.
I know you got to run, but two last quick things. One is there was a story this week, it may have been Forbes, it may have been Business Week, about the damage Trump's done to his business and his business brand, and how some of it may be irreparable. Is there any buzz in Washington about that? Because my thought has always been that Trump would take it so far, and then when he realized he was hurting the rest of his life, he'd mm-hmm. get out. Is there any buzz that he's looking for an exit ramp?
Not anymore. And I tell you, the anecdotal, you should see, ask real estate agents how hard it is right now to move
sure.
condos in Trump Towers in New York.
Well, here in Chicago, right behind us, mm-hmm. Chicago, people won't admit they live there. We did a story about it a couple of weeks ago where people are going, oh, no, I live on the Gold Coast, or I live on the river.
Or people used to go there because it is a cool view. People would go for a cocktail or
they
dinner.
They won't say they're meeting your Trump Tower.
Right.
I'll admit that, it's not my taste, not my style, but it is an elegant-looking building, and
right.
I hear it's a great view and all those things. But
right.
this is, anecdotally, he's done real damage to his brand. When you think about it, people that live in New York or live in Chicago probably don't align with Trump's politics. So that's where he's potentially, as a real estate developer, hurt his brand, since it's always about his own name. And then, there's little things. Look at what happened. They took Trump's likenesses off of the big golf course investment that he has in Dubai.
Yep.
You'll see some of that in Florida. Look, he'll figure it out. He'll figure out how to make money off of his sort of new constituency that he has carved out here over time. And look, there's millions of people he can tap into on that front. But being a global brand is probably hurt himself on that front.
Bush, last question. Bush had easily his best debate the other night, and he's still got quite a big chunk of money left. His donors are being begged and cajoled into hanging on. He's clearly ready for the gig, if you go by experience. Can he hang in?
Before the debate last night, I wouldn't have been surprised if he woke up the day after Christmas and said, I'm out.
Right.
Because he's got to make a decision here. To win, he's going to have to go full Quentin Tarantino, right? Which means he's going to have to shift. Everybody else in the cast has to go, and he's got to be the last man standing.
The hateful nine.
He's got to go nuclear on everybody in this race, and he's got the money to do it. But is that Jeb Bush? Is he a scorched earth kind of guy? Is he really going to sit here and torpedo Rubio? Is that the legacy he wants? Because he has spent all this money. He has spent all this money in Iowa, and his numbers have gotten worse. He has spent all this money in New Hampshire, and his numbers have gotten worse. This is not who he is. That said, he had a good debate performance. He found his voice. I think he's decided, if I'm going down, I'm bringing Trump with me.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I think he's making. He needs to, if he's truly going to do this, then go full bullet. Right now he's debating whether to say he's not going to support Trump if Trump's the nominee.
Oh, stop.
Buddy. Say it.
Yeah, you got to own that.
Say it.
Minimally.
Order the code red. Order the code red. Just say it. We know you don't think he should be president of the United States. Have the guts to say it. Don't you think Donald Trump would? In this case, if you're Bush, what would Donald Trump do?
Yeah, that's right. That ought to be their mantra. That ought to be their mantra all day long.
That's right. And this is, look, it's not who he is. He's a classy guy. He's an intellectual guy. He's an intellectually honest kind of guy on this stuff. But, if he's still got the fire, and I think this debating, it just makes him look like the politician that everybody was rejecting in the first place.
Don't spend too long on today. You got to get out and see Star Wars. I'm sure we could set up a 9 a.m. showing.
Yeah, we're my wife and I were discussing. We're probably a good week to 10 days away before we're figuring out when we're going to finally see it.
I got to believe you're going to sneak in somewhere.
Oh, we'll we'll figure it out.
All right, Chuck, thanks.
All right, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
7:12, plenty of politics to talk about, so I'm glad that Eric Adelson, Pat Brady, and Rick Pearson are here. Rick, let me start with you. And as always, as the host of the Sunday Spin, the first word in Sunday politics, here's what I like to do on a Sunday. I like to listen to you for the Sunday Spin. 9 o'clock, I got Chuck Todd on for Meet the Press. 10 o'clock, maybe I catch something on CNN. I don't know if you know, CNN has a lot of breaking news. and then later in the day, if I miss something, I can go back and pick it up on on demand.
On the podcast.
But it always has to start with the Sunday Spin. You're doing a great job with it.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it a lot. And frankly, you've got kind of the right sequence going. My good friend Chuck Todd, he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. All right. So a couple of things outside of the debate, which we'll get to. The mayor is on a listening tour?
Well, he's been going actually to various, not on the record locations, going to various police department districts, talking to the police, going to visit schools, those kinds of things.
What's the goal here?
The goal is to try to rebuild the lack of confidence that exists in City Hall right now. And also the lack of confidence, I think, that exists between the mayor's office and police.
Is the media invited to shoot these?
No.
But they were made aware they were happening.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, you learn about things a lot after the fact.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
All right, because my question then would be, is this for the mayor to gain a public perception that he is listening, he is involved, or does he actually hope to break down some walls here?
Well, in his own mind, he's trying to break down some walls,
right,
and try to rebuild some of this trust.
Doesn't happen in one visit to one precinct.
No, of course not. But again, you know, he's playing the long game here. Despite the protest, despite everything else, he's not going to resign, and he's got 3.5 years. And he knows, and we talk about this all the time, politics is short attention span theater, and I think that's what he's counting on.
Anita Alvarez is still under fire as well. If Anita Alvarez did decide to step down, who would decide who replaces her?
Well, frankly, there's no point in her doing so. The primary is coming March 15th.
But if she did?
I'm not sure what the succession order is. I'm sure that's probably the Cook County Democratic Organization or the county board would probably pick.
So Tony Preckwinkle would have a word in who her replacement would be if she resigned.
And she is behind one of the chief challengers to Anita Alvarez.
So when I brought up a conflict of interest, that probably was a legitimate question.
Well, but it wouldn't be perceived technically as a conflict of interest.
We don't care about technically. It's a conflict of interest.
Well, politically, it would be, yes.
Yeah.
But you know, you already have the county board now is asking.
Like, if I wanted to replace you with Pat Brady.
Now, wait a minute.
On the Sunday Spin.
Wait a minute.
And Pat's sitting here, and I said, you know, a lot of people think that I have some interest in Pat Brady. I'm just going to have, you know, I just think that maybe it'd be a better choice. I know both of you. Obviously, I have a conflict.
Well, but politics is politics.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a better way to say it.
No, but I'm just saying, look, if we're going to be
there's always going to be a guy. You know, everybody's got a guy.
Is just a direct line, and it's just frustrating to me because it shouldn't be in this position. And I already just said she's not going to go away, so in some ways it's a moot point. She's going to be there for the primary in March, and the voters will get to decide. All 11 that show up.
Well, but I will tell you, there's going to be a lot of people
that hope
show
you're
up
right.
in this primary. I mean, there's a lot on both sides.
I will drive them.
It's all 11
yes,
of them.
I'll take them.
But Kim Fox getting a very big endorsement today from Thornton Township, one of the biggest townships in the state, the Democratic organization there. That's a big endorsement for Kim Fox. And I think a lot of people are just kind of waiting to see, you know, how far Anita Alvarez continues in her reelection bid.
Pat, let me have you jump in on this. The state's attorney's job. What does the primary day for the state's attorney look like? And as far as duties and responsibilities?
They monitor the elections. I remember back in the day when I was assistant state's attorney many years ago, we were assigned to an area to monitor the elections along with the Chicago Board of Elections and some police departments. But that's basically the role. Mayor Daley, or then state's attorney Daley, used to have a war room up in the Daley Center where they took complaints. You'd go out there and look for election fraud, electioneering, whatever.
And the criminal part of the day is the rest of the day?
You mean what is she doing?
Criminal cases?
Most of the court calls are cleared. It might even be a court holiday.
It could be.
It could be a court holiday. So the court calls, I think, are clear. If it's not, they clear them out. But that's they work with the Attorney General doing that. It's an interesting assignment.
The rest of the news of the week, at least locally, seems to revolve around this potential teacher strike. This is going to be down the road in the spring if it happens, right?
Yeah, but this is going to be very interesting because I think, you know, when the teachers went on strike last time, I think there was a great deal of public support. This time around, in the middle of the school year, teachers walking out, I think there's a real question of the perception that will exist and whether that public support will be there.
In other words, the teachers, are they in it for the teachers or in it for the kids?
Well, that's always been, you know.
But more so in this case.
But more so in this case because of the inconveniencing factor that it would exist versus at the start of the school year.
Isn't it smart, though, to do it now, though, Rick? Because don't you think this is the last thing that Mayor Emanuel wants? And he might be a little more inclined to say, okay, just give them what they want.
Yeah, but he can't give them necessarily what they want. Because remember, so much of what the schools need is dependent upon Springfield. Mm-hmm. You know, they're looking for $480 million in cash and relief here, and Springfield, which can't get its own act together, you look at the city schools, you look at CTA, you look at the city budget itself and its needs in Springfield. There's a lot on the table for Chicago in Springfield, and Springfield ain't delivering anything right now.
And we'll talk about Springfield in a second, right after traffic. Get Eric in here too, because the other school districts around the state are not exactly being flush with state cash either, or the university system for that matter.
Well, frankly, it's the schools, elementary and secondary schools, are okay. It's the higher education in the state that is really starting to go down the
MAP grants. It's a big issue right now.
All right, let's get traffic first and more on that. And yes, we'll get to the primary because, man, what a great show of grown-ups that was. Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin, Pat Brady and Eric Adelson are here in the Freddie Gray mistrial of the first cop involved in Freddie Gray's death, or at least accused of being involved in Freddie Gray's death. Came down yesterday. Eric, you and I were talking about this off the air a second ago. Do you see any tie between that and what's gone on here with the speed or lack of speed with the prosecution and how it was handled? Hold on, let me get you an actual microphone.
All right, I won't have to talk as loud. There you go. Loudly. I wonder if it gives some credence to Alvarez taking as long as she did. I mean, here you have a situation where I think every law enforcement professional, prosecutor said that this district attorney in Baltimore rushed to indict in a sense because she had a certain bias. He was trying to tamp down the protests.
And there's four other cops, we should say, that are in line.
And there's four other cops. Yeah. But people thought she really didn't do the investigation, whether these guys were guilty or not. She had weak cases. And now there's been some validation that her rush to indict has led to a hung jury and now a mistrial. Does that, and I'm asking the question, not concluding, does it give Alvarez some optics, some talking points to be able to say, look, maybe we took longer than we should have, but you better do these things the right way if you're going to try to really get convictions on these guys because they're complicated cases. So, you know, some would say this isn't very complicated. There's a video and you see this execution pad, as you said. But I do think the implications of what happened in Baltimore may have some spillover here for Alvarez.
Yeah, and Pat, you used to do this every day, and this dovetails into politics. So what's your view of that?
My view is if I were any of them, the mayor, Anita Alvarez, or those police officers, I'd be more worried about a Justice Department investigation into the cover-up. It came out this week that the police reports were completely inconsistent with the video, and they're looking at all this. So I'd be more worried about that than the optics short-term politically for Anita, who may well pull it out. There's another person in the race, Donna Moore. And the vote could get diluted enough where else she went 35-36%, she can win.
Rick, the Justice Department's investigation, which I believe started Monday?
I believe that they were in town on Monday.
Right.
So this is, you got to make differentiation.
And there's two investigations.
Yeah. Well, this is a pattern in practice. That's a civil right, civil proceeding. That's what the Justice Department's doing.
Literally trying to show that there is an endemic culture problem where the pattern and practice is to take advantage of their power.
Right, and that's civil.
That'll take years, though, right?
That could take a couple of years. What I'm talking about is Zach Farden, the U.S. attorney.
A criminal cover-up.
Is doing an actual criminal cover-up investigation, which has been going on 4 years. So you can't mix the two because they're two separate missions and two separate outcomes.
And we know for a fact that's happening. They're doing that investigation?
Yeah. Anita said, and I think Fardin confirmed this at some point, they got the video a couple weeks after it happened. That's her kind of cover to go over to the U.S. Attorney's Office. I was working with them. She never said this, but the implication is that's why she didn't indict quickly.
Well, no, actually, that's what she did say. And indeed, the whole game plan for Anita Alvarez and Zach Fardin, they were supposed to have a joint press conference to announce state and federal charges against Van Dyke. That was the whole
thing. But the one thing that I've been watching her that she did not say, which to me is critical, she has never said, and maybe you caught it and I didn't, Rick, that she was asked by the U.S. attorney not to charge.
No, she was never... No.
She never said that.
No, but it was... Her argument is that we were conducting a joint investigation, and so that is why she didn't charge until frankly, it was clear that the video is going to get released.
So is the Justice Department overseeing the criminal and the civil?
Yeah, it's all the big Justice Department umbrella, but it's the Civil Rights Division. There's another, it's a whole division outside of Maine Justice.
But my understanding, and maybe I missed something, is that the criminal side of this is they're still investigating the shooting. Not that there was cover-up necessarily. I mean, obviously, if there's something else they find, they haven't said they're now investigating the investigators, are they? Have they said that?
Well, no, they've said that they haven't said anything, which is what they're supposed to do. They're not saying anything. But the people that have been in the grand jury, like the Burger King guy, went in, the tech guys, they talked about the tape.
This is the Burger King that was where the kid was shot, where Laquan was shot. The police came in, they grabbed the video, maybe they erased something, maybe they didn't.
Yeah, and this is what's so odd, and that's a good question, that of the joint nature of what Anita said, which I never really kind of bought this argument. If she wanted to do a joint investigation, and she's going after the murder, which is her province, is state's attorney, and typically it is local, murder is local, very few federal murder charges unless you kill the president or a congressman. So she could have teamed up with the Illinois State Police if she wanted a neutral party and done it quickly. It was kind of odd to go to the feds, but the point is the feds really don't do murders. They're going to be doing broader. You remember Rodney King, it was a civil right. They brought a criminal civil rights charge when the first round was lost at the state level. So,
but to emphasize Eric's point here, when you're going for an investigation of the shooting, you're going to be searching all angles of the shooting. So in a part of that, you may find a cover-up.
Yeah, and that's what the...
You don't have to specifically look for a cover-up. It may just be part of the evidence that you find.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, that being the cover-ups, those broader, more in-depth investigations are typically done by the feds because those are not, in addition to police misconduct, official misconduct, which the Van Dyke was charged with in addition to murder, there's civil rights issues that are the interest
and
of the federal government.
In many ways, depending on the timing of when they complete, and you know, they say they stay away from politics, but they look at the election calendar too. If they say something pre-March 15th, whether it's in support of Anita or against, could really swing her fate. Or whether they wait till after.
It could. I know that people, and I'm guilty of being a conspiracy theorist, but having worked in some pretty high-level cases, there really is no politics in that federal office at the Zach Fardin type level. I know they have in the back of their mind. I remember when Scott Lazar came out when George Ryan was under investigation and said, we don't have anything on him right now. He did do that. It would have a huge impact, but I'm not sure if it's a consideration.
No. My point was, of course, it's not.
If somebody speaks publicly on it, could influence it.
When they reach a conclusion,
and
it's the day before a primary, do they have the press conference that day, or do they wait 2 days? I mean, that's my question, I guess.
I think the one thing you should definitely do if they're going to wait is put an email together. Send an email out, put an email chain together. The only way people are going to avoid cover-ups now, apparently, is to go an encrypted WhatsApp. That's their only shot. All right, we got to talk about Springfield. We'll get to that in a second, too, and the clown car of the Republican primary and whether or not Jeb Bush is going to open up Portillo's.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year.
Is this Metallica?
I don't know.
AC/DC, who's this?
This is, I actually don't have the artist's name in front of me.
Burl Ives, isn't it?
Burl Ives.
Burl Ives. What the? Kevin doesn't know who Burl Ives is. Stop yelling at Kevin.
I'm sorry.
Kevin's 26. Burl Ives was dead for 26 years when Kevin was
born. Some tickets to a Burl Ives concert.
Look at all you turn on him. Ah, it's Burl Ives! All right, thanks, bro. Okay, it's 7:42, and...
By the way, I got a text from
Burl Ives.
No, from Tom Cross, former
from Tom Cross,
House Republican leader, who says, come on, trade me for Brady? Cochran, you can do better than that.
Wow. Oh, Tom Cross shooting at you now.
Okay. I'm used to getting shot at since third grade.
That's why you're a former Republican chairman.
Former everything.
That's right.
You never see anything in the present.
Eric Edelstein's here. Eric, what's the company?
Edelstein Liston Strategy.
And Pat, where are you?
Next Generation Strategies.
Rick Pearson, of course, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, Channel 9, CLTV, but more importantly to me, every Sunday morning at 7 on Sunday Spin. Who's the guest this weekend?
I've got David Yepsen from the Paul Simon Institute and also former national political writer at the Des Moines Register. And he's in Iowa right now and will assess the debate and what effect it may have as far as the Iowa caucus, which is now, I think, 47 days away.
We'll be there.
Great.
Yeah. So, I don't say this often, looking forward to being in Des Moines in February.
Better than January.
At 7:42, Andre brought this up in the big story, the Fabulous Four, what do you call them, the Four Tops?
Four Tops, yes. The governor and the Four Tops, the four top legislative leaders.
All right, so, Eric, when these guys get together, what do you anticipate happens in the meeting? Warm hugs, handshakes.
Yeah, it's, you know, they.
How's the kids?
Well, they do a Secret Santa thing. And, but
they draw like a grab bag.
Yeah, they limit the
but
cost.
But everybody wants the governor buying for
them.
They right?
do, but what they do is they cap the cost because, you know, they don't want to offend if someone can't afford something.
$5 limit.
Actually, nobody gets anything because they can't agree on how much people are going to spend.
That's right. That's right. So they're a stalemate trying to figure out the Secret Santa thing. And
does Mike Madigan look directly in the eyes of Bruce Rauner?
I don't think he's afraid to look in the eyes.
I don't think afraid is the word. I mean, do they have any communication? I mean, there's five people in the room. Is it they talk to the surrogates and then the surrogates talk to each other?
Well,
the
thing about Speaker Madigan is
he's a criminal.
He's one of the great. Oh, come on. He's one of the great listeners of all time, and he can make you incredibly uncomfortable just by sitting there.
He does not say a lot in these meetings.
Right.
And he didn't talk a lot either. How are we doing on getting Madigan on the show? Remember when Steve Brown guaranteed he'd be on the show? How's that going, Kev?
Not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
A lot of this.
Okay. Yeah, but these are. They do know one another, and I mean have known one another for a long time, so I think they can have a conversation.
Madigan and Rauner.
Yep.
I thought Rauner only talks to billionaires. He doesn't. He doesn't deign to talk to anybody.
Makes you think
has anybody
Madigan
seen Madigan and Getz and Danner's?
Not a billionaire. Fight?
I think the.
I was going to say, what do you think? Madigan's not a billionaire. Imagine the money he's hidden. News-wise, what's going to happen today?
Nothing.
All right.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's funny, but it's not funny.
No, there is a real question, and I've been talking to a number of people about you already have the governor's office is preparing the next year budget. Well, we don't have a budget this year, and they will present that in February, and there still will not be a budget. And the real question comes down to, you know, there was talk about, well, in January it takes fewer votes to pass something, so maybe January is when we can do something. No. Now we're moving into full blown political election season. And speaking of Tom Cross, at a panel I was on with him, he suggested, and I don't think it's out of the ordinary, there may not be a budget until November after the election.
Okay, if I'm a business and I'm thinking, you know, there's economic benefits to us being in Chicago, wait. I'm going to go to business of the state of Illinois that's going to present a new budget for a budget year that they didn't have a budget the year before. I mean, this is a clown car.
Right. Well, and I had Elliot Richardson from the Small Business Advocacy Council on the show last Sunday. And like all businesses, if anything, they just want predictability. They want that basic predictability. And that's what makes Illinois just such a risk now.
Look, I hope Emperor Rauner's fiddling lessons are going well, because that must be what he's doing. I'm not sure what else he could be doing.
Well, what's Madigan doing?
I think he's passed a budget. He sent it up to Rauner.
He's
governor,
passed a budget that's illegal.
It's not illegal. What's illegal about it? Well, it's not illegal. The governor has a mandatory veto powers.
Okay, he passed a budget that wouldn't work.
You know, the guy is the governor. I know everyone wants to equate Speaker Madigan as having equal power to this. It's just not the case.
I'm not sure he doesn't have more power. He certainly had more power over
the
Quinn.
The guy's the governor. He was elected to lead this state, and he's leading it right into the ground. And I think it's a disgrace.
Pat?
I don't agree. I mean, the reality is for the last 12 years, the state's been a fiscal mess, and the speaker will not move off anything. And the governor, Rauner, has said You know, Speaker Magnin did come out last week and say that he's for a 33% tax increase with no reforms. The governor thinks we need to reform the way this state operates. I think most voters agree. But Speaker Madigan has not moved off anything, and he can't because his donations come from labor, public sector labor, and he can't compromise on anything or he loses his power, which is the money that he uses to get his people.
Can't we see the end game here? We're not going to break the unions. The unions aren't going to be broken out, so why can't
we? You don't have to, but you can make some reasonable, common-sense reforms to workers' compensation, to some of the collective bargaining rules to...
But, Pat, you should tell the governor that because the governor wants to break the unions.
He
is vehemently opposed to organized labor. Everything he's said, his body language, everything he's done, he wants to break the backs of unions.
Well, the reality is he's reached agreements with several of the public sector unions already on the labor
that represent about 600 of 40,000 workers.
All right, but he's gotten
600
some,
workers.
He's gotten some deals done, so if you really want to break the unions, he wouldn't be
negotiating. And part of those deals... are part of the reason there is no deal with the big unions is because of his intransigence in dealing with costs involving health insurance.
And
that having been said, when you talk about the fact that he is not anti-union, if you look at what he has put into the poison pill in things like putting a property tax freeze, whatever, let's just say what the conditions are, that you, as a municipality, you do not have to collectively bargain with public employee unions involving wages, hours, pensions, vacation time, tenure, those kinds of issues.
But does anybody in the state really think that the public sector unions don't have an inordinate amount of influence on what goes down in Springfield?
I think
reducing the power of public sector unions would be involved
because there's the prevailing wage issue, which he wants to block, and that would involve private sector unions on public construction.
Okay, but not to make Pat's point for him, but if you push this forward, where does it end? If nothing changes, nothing changes.
But
guess what? We're going down a slide that is going to turn us into Detroit.
Steve, this governor is focused on issues that have nothing to do with the budget. He has this
ideological
viewpoint.
But explain to me what Madigan has done. What has he done?
Madigan's standing up for working people and saying, you know what? There's something called collective bargaining, that people have the right to bargain for their wages, for their health care, for their hours, of which this governor, more than Walker, more than Kasich, more than Scott in Florida, this guy is anti-union and he wants to break their backs.
All right, so if we go backwards, which is we're also fond of doing here, if we go backwards, Madigan's been in power forever and the state has gone to hell in a handcart. At what point does he get any responsibility for it?
Look, there's responsibility to go all the way around, but right now you've had former Republican governors Thompson and Edgar and lots of other reasonable Republicans saying this governor is not dealing in good faith, he's doing a disservice to the state, and you ought to sit down and negotiate and get things done.
Okay,
that's not Democrats saying that, that's Republicans saying that.
The Speaker has an 18% approval rating right now. The voters a year ago voted for reform. Change is difficult. It takes time. The governor has compromised on many, many things that he ran on. We're down to 4 or 5 points, whereas the other side of the aisle haven't moved an inch.
Why are Edgar and Thompson saying this runner's really not doing anything to help the state?
Well, this is what we see now. The Democrats like to focus on the past and not the future. So I guess if you're looking to Edgar and Thompson, you know, I don't know how relevant that is on the discussion. Well, we're talking about the state.
Those are guys who passed budgets and actually got things done in this state.
Again, we know how this is going to end. Or don't we?
No, we don't.
Because if nothing changes, it's going to get worse.
The only sign of really how we're going to see how this ends is going to be through the election process. And that will ultimately show whether people believe the governor's at fault or whether Mike Madigan's at fault.
Well, it's not that simple, though. It's not that simple because the next election is he's not up in a year.
But it will be a referendum.
No, absolutely. No, it won't be because
that's how it's going to get played. It's going to be a referendum of Mike Madigan versus Bruce Rauner. That's how each side is going to play it.
Well, here's the deal. The map is rigged. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said this is a blatantly political. This is totally into the weeds and boring. I'm sorry for the listeners, but the map is totally rigged. The chances that Speaker Madigan could lose the speakership are zero.
It's about number of seats. That's what will determine this.
But the reality is the game is rigged, and it's been rigged by Madigan. I don't criticize him for making himself a good map, but it's a blatantly political map, so it's going to be really tough for the Republicans to ever...
But Rauner has said his goal is to basically get more seats for Republicans and
win
the Democrats. And so that's why I'm saying that's why this election will be a referendum on Rauner and Madigan. Not that Madigan loses his speakership, But does he pick up seats? Does he lose seats? That's what the real game is going
to be. Okay, we got to get traffic in here. But here's the thing. If Rauner drops the union question, he's not going to. But if he drops the union question completely, what's Madigan do?
I think there's a much easier deal to get a budget.
Well, so if he says I'll give up the union argument completely, shouldn't Madigan say, okay, then here's what I'm willing to do for the people of Illinois?
I think Madigan has said he's willing to do things on workman's comp and other issues.
He won't even compromise.
The fact
on,
is, as Rick said, he's got these poison pills in everything he wants to do that are anathema to any Democrat, whether it's Mike Madigan or anybody who believes that working people have the right to bargain for their wages.
He won't even compromise on term limits. I mean, stuff that everybody wants, he won't compromise on.
Yeah.
And what does term limits have to do with the
budget? It has to do with the reforming the way this state operates in term limits, because we've had a guy who's been down
what
there.
What does it have to do with how much money is being spent on education in the state of Illinois?
Why don't you let me finish?
Okay.
The way this state has been operated, single-party rule, and he's been down there for 45 years, has a direct impact on how money is spent in the state and how policy is made. So term limits and redistricting reform, all that stuff needs to be on the table.
And it wouldn't take effect for, I believe, 6 years.
But if Rauner is an abject failure since he took office, he's an abject failure for less than a year.
He is.
Madigan's been in power for 41 years.
Madigan's not in charge of the state. Rauner was
on
elected
paper.
State. Rauner was elected governor of the state.
On paper. On paper.
I thought you were actually in charge of everything.
If I was, we'd have it fixed by Friday at noon. Back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Rick Pearson and Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here, and they're available for birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and elective surgeries as well. So
Christmas parties.
And Christmas parties, sure, absolutely. The primary this week, any poll numbers out immediately afterwards to change anything?
I have not seen any flash polls that I would respect. I mean, I think Trump was trumpeting that, after the debate, I'm up again.
I'd be really interested to listen to your show on Sunday and see what Yebsen has to say about Iowa.
Yeah, because the numbers in Iowa have started to turn Cruz's way.
Big time.
And that will be very interesting. And I really appreciate what Chuck Todd was saying, too, about if Cruz, does win Iowa and Trump decides to try to trump Cruz's acceptance speech, what do the networks do?
Here's the difference between Cruz and Santorum, though. Cruz has this sort of longer-term play, and if you look at the March 1st states, there's this kind of southern evangelical firewall, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Virginia.
The SEC primary.
Yeah, I mean, Cruz could not run the table, but he could win a lot of those states on March 1st, and then you're really going to be in this who is the institutional moderate alternative, and Trump continues to screw it up, because you could see it going to Rubio or maybe even a resurrected Bush. But if Trump's still in there, this thing is just chaos.
Well, and that was Bush's line. Trump is the chaos candidate.
Pat, who does the most damage to the Republican Party as a nominee, Trump or Cruz?
Trump, followed closely by Count Chocula Cruz.
I mean, it really is your nightmare,
that's
right?
Terrible. But I see Rubio just drafting off these guys. I do agree. Some of the other guys that are taking Rubio's vote probably have to get out after New Hampshire, maybe Lindsey Graham. Well, but Christie Rising hurts him there. But I still think our best guy, and I think the Democrats think this too, to run against Hillary is Rubio.
It was very funny in one of the polls about who is better able to work with Congress, and a plurality had picked Cruz, where everybody in Congress hates, on both sides, hates Cruz.
He shut down Congress and went to Iowa and started campaigning. That's how sincere his rhetoric is.
Yeah, and Rubio won't go to work at the Senate. I mean, it's just,
but I can't wait to see the Clintons on stage again talk about the 90s. Weren't they great? They were great. Wasn't that great, Bill, when you got impeached?
I am telling you.
That's really good deflection. He got nothing good to say about the Republican primary.
Wasn't that great?
Right,
wasn't that
now
great when Monica...
I always think Cruz looks like he's in on some joke that only he and himself know about all the time.
I agree. I think he's a very dangerous candidate because he does have a path and that he would be not good for Republicans.
Well, if you go with the general theory that it's the most important job interview ever, it's the president of the United States, and the people that you're leaving to try to ask for the new job don't like you. The people in the Senate don't like Cruz. You make that extension to Jersey, as I said to Chuck Todd.
Well, you've been to cocktail parties, I'm sure, and there's one person that's drunk and talks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's Trump, and that's the rest of the ticket. They don't get a chance to say anything. He gets 64% of the media attention right now.
That same party you're talking about, Ted Cruz is in the back taking all the shrimp.
It is reassuring to know that Trump is so facile talking about the nuclear triad, though, isn't it? That he's so
aware. He got schooled by the 44-year-old.
God, yeah. It's frightening.
It's you're frightening. You know what? That's the word.
It is frightening.
That is the word. Eric and Pat, thank you very much. Rick Pearson, we'll see you Sunday morning, 7.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.